Hello and welcome to another little chat with me today. It is the something of November. It's the 3rd of November. And last week was a bit tricky recording the chat because I'd actually managed to pull a muscle in my leg when I was doing the park run the previous weekend. And so I was rather hobbling about. So hobbling about, trying to walk the dog whilst kind of limping and doing a recording at the same time wasn't really going to work. And this week we've kind of had a conspiracy of things like bad weather and strange things happening, like the lane I was going down was blocked by a truck that was stuck there. It wasn't a huge truck because the lanes are narrow, but it one of the hazards of rural life is this little lorry delivering, it said wood pellets for a fuel, you know, wood-fired boiler, which is interesting. Don't know who that was for, but anyway, it was stuck in the lane and jammed in pretty tight across the lane. I think its tyres had lost traction on the hill on the side of the lane. So I had to turn back then. And today, as I was going down the same lane, a tractor was coming the other way with a hedge trimming device on, sort of thwacking the hedge and sending bits everywhere. And also it was blocking the entire lane because it's only just wide enough for the tractor. So I've been turned back a couple of times that way. So here we are on Wednesday and I am indoors and it's actually the evening. So I'm sitting in the room where I do my writing at the desk and I've got a cup of tea. I'm having a cup of decaf tea because it's the evening. So perhaps if you contributed to the sort of send me a cup of tea at coffee.com, maybe via the website or whatever. Thank you very much. I'm raising my mug to you now for buying me this nice cup of tea. Keep me going. I do tend to drink quite a bit of tea whilst I'm writing, so it's good. I try not to have too much coffee because it might be a bit migraine inducing for me, but I know there's caffeine in tea and stuff, but I don't have it very strong, so I think I'm okay. But, you know, anyway, I sometimes have decaf as well. So health gurus may say I'm wrong and I should have no caffeine whatsoever, but, you know, hey, got to have something. So, I thought what I'd do is answer a question that was posted on the website at michaelcampling.com. Because, you know, you should feel free, please, to post comments on there about anything, if you have anything you want to ask or mention on any of the posts. Even if they're old, I will still hopefully see them and respond. It can sometimes be a bit tricky with the comment system there that I'm not sure whether I've, you know, caught everything, but I try to. If you ever made a comment, you find I've missed it, do please give me a nudge. But anyway, I do try to keep up with them. Okay. There was a comment from a reader saying, what did I think personally, I believe was the sort of the tone of the question, how did I feel in a kind of personal way about the character Dan Corrigan? Because the reader mentioned that some of the reviews are quite negative. People say, oh, I can't understand this character, why anybody would read about this character, he's awful, can't understand why they'd be friends and so on. Now, some of those reviews are actually older. And when you get I don't take a huge amount of notice of the reviews. I mean, it's lovely when you get nice ones, but it's important not to get discouraged when you get negative ones. And everybody does. I mean, you can look at any book, even one, you know, your favourite book in the world, even a multi-million seller, you'll probably find somebody saying one star, I hated it, you know. But that's the way it goes. I think sometimes reviews kind of tell you more about the person who's doing them than they do about the actual book. However, coming to this point, when you get a lot of reviews telling you something similar, it might mean sometimes that you've got something wrong. So one of the things that happened with the A Study in Stone, and partly it was an experiment, but because it was a switch of genre for me, I think I made a mistake in first giving it a subtitle, labelling it as a cosy mystery. Now, I maintain that it's on the cosy end of the crime spectrum, and they're certainly not gory or very violent or, you know, full of strong language or sex or anything like that. Nothing wrong with those things, but I didn't particularly, you know, feel like writing that way at the moment. And once you kind of started writing in a certain way, I think people come to expect something from you, and you kind of think, you know, you've got to try and be consistent. Now, a lot of books that are labelled as cosy mysteries are very, very cosy. They are kind of an escape from reality for a lot of people in a nice, cosy, comfortable world in which, you know, there's no kind of, not too much jeopardy or anything. And most people are really, really nice. And, you know, perhaps they have like a tea shop or a bookshop or a cake shop or something like that often. You know, they kind of, there's certain tropes in there, certain recurring themes in a lot of them, some of them involving, you know, things, sort of fantasy type elements like witches and paranormal things and all kinds of other, you know, obviously not particularly realistic is what I'm saying. You know, they're not particularly gritty in any way. Now, I was hoping that the cover would do the job of showing that it's not like that, because those books tend to have illustrated covers, you know, with perhaps a picture of said bookshop or cake shop or, you know, a cake or a cat or something, or a witch on a broomstick. They have these things on there, and they're often illustrated in quite jolly colours, sort of nice, you know, friendly looking fonts and stuff. But I chose elements of the cover carefully. First, I mean, the first one I made, and it wasn't great, but even so, I tried to show that was a certain, you know, kind of tone towards the cosy end of the crime spectrum. Now, mystery is a huge genre with lots of separate things. And what one person thinks of as a mystery might be a police procedural, quite a gritty one. Other people might think of these very, very cosy ones. So it could be that some of those people feeling that they were going to get, you know, the familiar fare, and perhaps seeing that it was set in a small village, kind of thought, great, this is just going to be one of those kind of books. And when it wasn't, they were a bit disappointed, and they found, you know, they weren't prepared to let the character go and be a bit more of a realistic modern man, or modern men in the case of the main two characters. So that's one thing. So I later changed it to be, I call it a British mystery, because I think that is part of it. It's kind of has a heritage, that's kind of the books that have inspired me, all the British mysteries that I've read over the years. And I'm not saying that they, you know, I'm not giving myself airs here and saying, oh, they're as good as, you know, Conan Doyle or Agatha Christie or whatever. I'm not saying that at all. I would never say that. Wouldn't dream of it. But trying to indicate that is the kind of tone and something in the style, but there's something quite British about them and about the characters. So I think that was perhaps more accurate. There were a couple of points where I did actually go through and make some changes. Can't remember when exactly this was, but I kind of thought, well, hang on, is there something that is making the characters seem a bit more abrasive than I really intended? And so I did look back and made some small changes, and I kind of tried to provide a bit more background to the way that the two men became friends as well. There was just a few sentences here and there to kind of to bring that picture through to the reader, because I got it and a lot of readers got it, but I felt if there's a few people not getting it, then maybe I haven't done it right. So one of the good things about being an indie publisher like me is that you can do these things. You can go back and change things. I mean, you don't do it willy-nilly, and you don't do it every 5 minutes. You might occasionally want to do something in a measured kind of way and make alterations if you think it is warranted. And I looked very carefully and very critically, and I found a few places. And these are small things to do. And if you read it before, I don't think you would notice much in the difference. Okay, but going back to the question, because it's kind of, there were two parts to it, referring to the reviews and then there's the, do I like the character? Yeah, I do. I really like Dan. I've liked him from the beginning. He kind of came first. And I spent quite a long time thinking about him. I didn't want him to arrive fully formed. A lot of the classic kind of amateur sleuths that we read about, we never discover how they get into this this line of work. And it's rather an odd thing because pretty much everybody, when confronted with crime, because crimes are awful and, you know, murder is dreadful, would be, you know, shocked, upset, frightened. We would back away from it. We would draw our curtains, shut our doors and hope never to hear about it again. But your amateur sleuth can't be like that. Now, it seemed to me that for him to begin his journey to being an amateur sleuth in a full-blown murder, with all the clues and suspects and red herrings and all those other things, was just too far-fetched. It felt far-fetched to me, and so I don't think I would have enjoyed writing it that way and probably wouldn't have made a good job. Whether it would have felt far-fetched to readers, I don't know. Now, you know, I probably could have done it. I probably could have done it, but I kind of didn't want to. I wanted him to start out as being a guy who was essentially a fish out of water. So he had a lot of the things that made him, you know, identify in a certain way were stripped away from him. So, yeah, he was a very bright guy, an intelligent guy, a very observant guy. So he needed him to have those kind of aspects because, you know, you don't want a sleuth who's a bit of a dud and doesn't really notice what's going on in front of him. You need somebody who kind of is interested enough in people and what makes them tick and who, you know, maybe feels like they can sniff out a liar or an underhand motive or whatever, or a bit of deceit. Now, most of us aren't kind of like that. We might like to think we are occasionally, but most of us, you know, we're quite easily taken in by the things we believe. But I want somebody who to be a little bit other, a little bit outside of the normal run-of-the-mill, you know, type people like most of us. So we had to be a little bit extraordinary. So there you've got somebody who's kind of highly driven, highly motivated, very bright, very competitive. And he has all these things that he's been pursuing as his lifestyle. You know, he's sort of designer clothes, posh things, going up the old career ladder and so on, and doing all those kind of things. And I've worked a bit in a corporate environment going back a way back. So, you know, I had some way of writing about that in an authentic kind of way. And also I've left that world, so I kind of know what it is to have a shift, you know. So authenticity of it was very important to me. So it's set in, although a fictional village, it's in the area where I live. So sort of I've got that part I should be able to write about. And I've had a sort of varied career and varied experiences. The corporate world didn't particularly suit me. I was never going to be a Dan Corrigan of this world, but, you know, I kind of got out of it after 5 or so years and was glad to leave that, at which point I went into teaching and became primary school teacher, which, of course, is what Alan was in the past. So I've kind of got that part as well. So, yeah, you've got to think that somebody like that who have built their whole world on this kind of status and status symbols, you know, a posh company car and all that kind of thing, making big decisions, you know, perhaps playing squash with the chairman of the board, all this kind of stuff, suddenly has it all taken away. They kind of, I don't want to do spoilers just in case you haven't read it and you want to. But so Dan's gone through a bit of a crisis in his life where he's escaping from everything because it's all come tumbling down around his ears. And he's not going to be all sweetness and light at that point. He really isn't. He's going to be a bit up and down, a bit all over the place. He's kind of he's got all these ideas buzzing around his head and nothing to do with them. He's in a very odd situation. And I kind of needed to break him down a bit in order to build him back up. So all this was stuff that I thought about really before I got going with the first story. I just kind of have the idea of him in my head. So, Yeah, he's a complex character, and he has plenty of room to grow from the beginning, and he does. He learns from his mistakes. He's not an evil or bad person. I mean, somebody in one review said, oh, he's a bit of a, you know, and they used a rude word, I think, but he said he's basically all right. And yeah, I was pleased that reviewer had put that. They got the idea. He is sort of flailing around a bit, and he does kind of rub people up the wrong way at first. And in his old life, that would have been fine. It would have been very fine for him to face up to people, to sort of square up to them, challenge them. And everybody would have thought that was fine. In that kind of very competitive rat race, you know, dog eat dog, devil take the hindmost, that was the behaviour that was rewarded. And it got him a long way. And so he would have sort of been in the trenches doing that kind of thing. And then suddenly to come out of that in a world where he doesn't make sense, he doesn't fit. His skills don't account for anything. You know, he's gone from being a high performer to a kind of a bit of a spare part. And he doesn't like that either. You know, but he is determined and to do something about it. And he has a sort of a reasonable amount of self-awareness, and he's kind of redeemed a bit by Alan as well, and by Alan's faith in him early on, because Alan's the kind of person who, you know, takes people at face value. He's kind of an open book, and, you know, he'd do anything for you. If you knocked on his door and said your car was broken down, he would come out and, you know, come out and help you fix it or give you a shove or whatever. So he's a solid guy in my mind. And that was another thing that I wanted to explore, the importance of friendships, even if they seem like unlikely friendships. Because I think male friendship is often not discussed much in fictional settings. It is sometimes, but not always explored kind of fully. And it is important, and it's important to a lot of males, I think, in real life. And often, certainly in my experience anyway, you often find that as a man, you might go through life having small circles of quite close friends. So you might have, you know, two or three close friends rather than a big kind of gang of you. You know, you might have a bigger gang of sort of mates who you hang around with for one reason or another, but kind of close friends, you might have like one or two if you're lucky. I've been lucky to have had some close friends in life, and they're important, you know. So I kind of thought it was interesting to explore the idea of people who are not the same. So they're a bit of an odd couple. And I use that phrase advisedly because that is kind of a thing, isn't it? Like the odd couple story, which I like. I love all those stories. You know, there's things like the one with the odd couple, the movie, which is a classic with Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau, I think I'm right in saying. So, yeah, there's that kind of bonding thing that can happen with people who might be thrown together in a smaller kind of environment, and they kind of get something from each other, even though they don't seem on the face of it to be obviously compatible. They kind of see something in each other that they gravitate towards. So for Dan, who is up in the air and all over the place, he sees in Alan somebody who is grounded. It's what he needs. So at some kind of instinctive level, he knows he needs him. Also, Alan knows the ropes. He's the local. He's been lived there a few years. So he's kind of, you know, his way into that community. And also he's just a plain old friendly face, you know, which is what you want to see when you're in moments of adversity. You want to see a friendly face, don't you? So Alan represents those. Now, Alan is a guy who's at the opening has become a bit sort of old ahead of his time. So he's become a bit set in his ways. He lives on his own. He lives comfortably and happily in many ways, but he's kind of lacking a bit of excitement. He's lacking male company of people who are kind of similarly intelligent as him. Because he's a bright guy as well in his own quiet way. He's not quite demonstrative. Oh, I can't even say the word. You know, he doesn't display it so much. He doesn't make a show of his intelligence. He's more of reserved in that kind of way. But he's a bright guy as well. He's not daft. And he kind of wants somebody else as company who will kind of, he kind of wants to be challenged a bit. He wants to be taken out of his comfort zone a bit, I think. And so he gravitates towards Dan. And so it does make sense. So if people didn't get that, you know, that's there's nothing I can do about that, really. I write it as best as I can. And there are little clues in there scattered through the books. And lots of people do get it, thankfully. And I get these lovely emails and reviews and comments and things where people say, oh, I love the relationship between the two guys. And I'm so pleased when I get those messages because I think, yes, you've totally got what I was trying to say. And that's so lovely. You know, as a writer, it's kind of what you want to hear, that kind of your vision for the story has been picked up by somebody. So thank you very much if you have said those things to me. They really help. So I hope that kind of answers the question. I do like him. I guess I'm probably quite a complex character myself. It's not a regular run-of-the-mill thing to do, to kind of to do some of the things I've done in my life, you know. So I suppose I can relate in that way. You know, I worked when I was in the corporate world, I was a computer programmer and working for a financial institution. So kind of at the time, there was a big shortage of people in those fields, and I could have stayed doing that and I would have had less work and more money. I probably would have retired by now, to be honest. But I, you know, I threw all that aside and wanted to do something that had more value. And so I went into teaching, you know, when I was as a mature student. And that's quite an unusual thing to do. I mean, lots of people do it, but it's not particularly common. You know, I didn't go to college when I was to train when I was 18, like a lot of people. I was much older when I went to do it. But you know, I was happy to do that, to throw it all off and go and start again. And then later I left teaching to become a full-time dad in a time when that was quite an unusual thing to do. And that was great. And then I, you know, went into writing. And so you know, all these things are quite unusual. So I guess I'm not just someone who's spent his life kind of following the rules and staying in your lane kind of thing, to use the common phrase at the moment. I've not done that. So I can kind of relate to Dan at that level as well. He's not a guy to sort of do what he's told. And if you were to tell him he was being awkward, then he would probably be quite pleased with that. And, you know, hey, we have the awkward squad. You know, I'm the same. if you're a bit awkward and you don't mind disrupting things, then that can make you an interesting person. And I like people like that, you know, so I do like him very much. And I spend a lot of time in his company, you might say. Even when I'm not actually writing, I do actually think about him quite a bit. And I put quite a bit of time and energy into thinking about him and what he would be like, what his background would be. Other things have just kind of emerged as I went along. So yeah, it's okay, you know, if people don't take to him from the first book, then that's fine. At least they've discovered it and the first book's free, so they haven't like lost anything. And it's quite short, so they haven't even taken much of their time. I mean, if I'd known a lot of people were going to like him, I would have made that book longer, and I've, you know, said that before, because it was an experiment. That's the length it is. and I kind of give away an extra bit of the next book, not as a marketing thing, but just to try and give people a bit more value if they, I mean, I know it's free, but if you get the book and you're interested enough to see what the next book is like, then you don't have to go out and spend $5 to get the first few chapters. I mean, I know there's previews on the stores, but I just thought it's more convenient if it's there. So I gave people the first few chapters as well. So that's kind of the story of it. In retrospect, it would have been great to have made it longer and perhaps to have explored the characters more in the first book. I've thought, is there a way I could do it? Is there a way I could make it conform to type for some, you know, for the genre a bit? And I don't think there is. I think the story kind of stands up. I quite enjoy the story. It's not the traditional murder story, but it does have, for me, it has quite a bit of an emotional resonance. And I like the conclusion of it. And it's got a bit of a puzzle. Some people say, oh, is it a mystery? Well, it's a mystery in the sense that you don't quite know what it's about. I mean, that's all a mystery is really, isn't it? It's a book where you don't quite know what's going to happen. You don't know who's done what to who. It doesn't say not all mysteries have to be murder mysteries. There are all kinds of mysteries. Okay, I've talked for quite a while. My throat's getting dry. I must have a sip of this tea. So thank you very much for listening. Literally having a sip of tea there. Thank you very much for listening and taking the time. Thanks for all your comments and things on the website. Big, huge thank you to all the people who've supported me on the Ko-fi site, the ko-fi site. There's buttons on the website at michaelcampling.com. Make it quite easy. And a huge thank you to all those people who opt to do it as a monthly a monthly donation, which is really, really nice. I know I've gone on for much longer than usual, just a quick note to say, for instance, I've just used that money to buy a new bit of software which formats ebooks and paperbacks, and that will be a huge benefit to me because I will now be able to go back and republish some things, make them a bit nicer, and also I'll be able to make sure that some of my older books are out in paperback because they're not all of them. It's the kind of thing that these contributions help in a very concrete way to give me tools to serve the readers better. Because I want to make sure that if people want paperbacks, they can get them, and that all the ebooks look nice and all the e-readers and so on, and they're all nicely formatted. And some of them, I think, possibly need redoing. But I will be getting to those. So I hope I've answered the question. It's great how you say, you can see like a simple comment on the website can spark me rabbiting on for half an hour. But it's great because it gives me a subject to think about and talk about, and I do appreciate it. Okay, so I'll say thanks one more time and I'll talk to you again next week. In the meantime, take care, happy reading, and it's goodbye from Devon. Bye.